UK Wine Show, show number 14. G'day, and welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 14, for the 1st of September. I'm still in Australia, and this has been recorded in Brisbane, but I'll be going down to Adelaide to look at a few of the wineries down there. I've got some great interviews lined up, including meeting with the people behind Zork, the new wine cork. But this week, the show's about Decanter magazine. Decanter is the UK's leading magazine, and one of the top wine magazines in the world. We're going to be talking to Guy Woodward and Adam Lechmere. Adam is the web editor, and Guy Woodward is currently the editor for the magazine. We're going to be talking a wee bit about Decanter magazine and who buys the magazine, what sort of things they have in the magazine, and good top tips from these guys. But before we get into that, we're going to have the news again with me, as I've got all the recording equipment with me in Australia. Against all the odds, wine company Chateau Musard harvested a vineyard before the ceasefire in Lebanon. Local villagers helped rescue Musard's trial vineyards of Chardonnay, even though fighting between Hezbollah and Israel made picking grapes in the Bekaa Valley extremely dangerous. UK director Jane Swater told 3050, "The pickers we normally use obviously weren't there, so we had mothers and their boys picking the grape. Everyone mucked in and helped out. It was fantastic." Post-ceasefire, women also helped rescue the vintage at Lebanon's oldest chateau, Chateau Kazar, last week. However, even with the grapes saved, there's no guarantee that winemakers are being able to get back to normal. Jane Salter explained, "Things are still pretty difficult because of the blockade at the ports. This presents a problem, not only for the companies who need to get bottles out for export, but also for getting things like corks into the country." Tesco's intends to put more fine wines into its stores. The supermarket chain, which introduced fine wine in around 50 stores in March, plans to significantly increase the range as well as sell some lines into a further 100 stores. Currently, around 50 stores sell the entire range, which consists of 50 wines, while another 90 stores stock half of it. The fine wine selection is priced between £10 and £50, although South Kensington store has bottles at more than £100. And finally, Zinfandel looks set to become the official grape of California. A legislative bill proclaiming it as the Sunshine State's historical wine has passed through this month and is now awaiting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's signature. According to the bill, California is the only place in the world to find the old vine Zinfandel, where a few growers in Sierra Nevada foothills continue the tradition that began during the gold rush. Zinfandel ranks as California's most popular wine. It accounts for around 10% of the grapes grown in the state and is bottled by around 600 of the 800 wineries. I actually read an article in one of the Australian newspapers the other day about this, and whilst it looks good on paper, a lot of people are a bit upset about it because they don't want to be pigeonholed as being a Zinfandel producer, particularly given the Napa people like to consider Cabernet Sauvignon as the grape that they do best. So we'll see if that gets through the legislative process. Coming up next is the interview with Decanter Magazine. Let's have a listen to that. Hi, I'm here with Guy Woodward and Adam Lechmere from Decanter Magazine. Guy's the deputy editor of the magazine, and he's currently the editor, while Amy, the editor, is away on maternity leave, and Adam is the web editor.
Hello.
How are you guys?
I'm very well, thank you.
Do you guys want to talk a wee bit about Decanter? You know, when did it start up?
The magazine's been going for 30 years now. The magazine was obviously the first kind of part of the overall of Decanter's brand. And since then, we've obviously added on a website, various events which we hold, the Decanter Fine Wine Encounters, big tastings that our readers come along to. And then the most recent new edition 3 years ago was the World Wine Awards that we host every year.
We're going to be doing a show on that next week. So it's the Decanter magazine, you guys are focused on to the wine trade or the wine consumer? Very much
consumer facing. There's a host of magazines for the trade, pretty well served. But unfortunately, wine writing for the consumer is slightly dying off. There's been a bit of a dearth of it in the newspapers over recent years. Newspapers have cut back a little bit.
Your magazine's geared towards UK consumer, or is it worldwide? You know, how's that work?
It's geared towards, predominantly towards UK consumers, but our readership is very much expanding overseas now, particularly in the States and other wine-producing countries, and we've just launched a Chinese language edition, two Chinese language editions, actually, to cater for the different languages in both mainland China and surrounding areas such as Taiwan, Singapore, Hong Kong.
The Decanter.com website, Adam, what's the main elements there? You've got your news stories. What's going on there?
Well, the prime reason that anybody comes to Decanter.com, that the two most visited sections of the site are news and recommendations. We've been going, we launched Decanter.com in October 2000. So we're coming up for 6 years old now. So we're a veteran website, really, when you consider that the first web boom was late 99, 2000. Yeah, our news section is recognised worldwide as being one of the best sources of wine news on the internet. And we really concentrate on making it kind of very accessible, newsy, slightly tabloidy. We don't shy away from slightly salacious or slightly edgy stories. We like to sort of slightly poke fun at people. If Robert Parker, for example, is being especially pompous or precious, we like to poke at that balloon sometimes in order to pop it. And recommendations also a vital part of the website. You know, people go there to you know, if somebody has a wedding coming up and they want to find 30 great wedding champagnes, they know it's going to be current. They know those wines are going to be accessible. And also the website's, you know, got a lot of other sections, learning sections, how to taste wine, how to spit, where to buy wine, how to speak to your agent. A wine finder section with 25,000 wines on it. It's a big, deep website.
Who is a typical Decanter consumer, both from on the website, but also in your magazine? You know, what sort of person would be a typical Decanter consumer?
I think if you have in your mind customers of the top wine merchants in the country, most of our readers will probably buy wine from merchants rather than supermarkets. They're looking for something a little bit different that they can't get in the supermarket. They also tend to be very much entrenched in the traditional classic wine regions of the world: Bordeaux, Burgundy, the Rhone. They buy wine to lay down, not just to drink with dinner tonight. And so they're constantly wanting, they're quite demanding in terms of the information that they want. You know, they want to get stuff that they can't just find necessarily from newspaper columns or from merchants' own info on their wines.
What are they, male, female? What sort of breakdown is that?
Very much male, actually, about 90% so. And again, I would guess that's a demographic that we have in common with most of the merchants. Tends to still be the case that it's mainly men who are buying the higher end wines.
Given that a lot of wine is now purchased by females, particularly when they're going to the supermarket to buy wines, why do you think that really hasn't gone through with your magazine? Do you think you're getting a lot of secondary readership with females, or do you think...
It'd be great if we could. I think it's a long battle, and it's probably a battle that a lot of the wine industry face in general, in that the wine buying market is almost split into two now. You're getting people who buy from the supermarkets, who are buying wine to maybe drink that weekend or for a dinner party that they're hosting, who are, you know, they enjoy wine, they know what they like, they want to know maybe a little bit more, but they're not at the stage yet where it's a real lifestyle pursuit for them, where they're going to really spend big money on that. Hence, you know, they're not yet at the stage where they're going to want necessarily a monthly magazine on the topic. But we're trying to reach out to that new market, trying to make the magazine as accessible as we can. We just did a tasting last month, actually, of the supermarket's own brand wines.
That's like the Tesco's Finest.
Exactly, yeah.
And how did they go?
It was interesting, actually. I mean, there was some good stuff out there, you know, and we're very much kind of trying to encourage people not to have preconceptions with the wines that they see on the shelves. Don't get me wrong, not all of the wines we tasted from the supermarkets were great, but there was some decent stuff there for everyday drinking, so it was an interesting exercise.
Most people in the trade I've spoken to sort of rate Waitrose as the top supermarket. Is that what you guys found for their own label?
I think very much so in terms of their range, but actually on their own label, they were somewhat trumped by M&S and to a lesser extent Sainsbury's.
In the magazine itself, you guys look at restaurants. Restaurants and food, matching and food, what's the tie in there?
Yeah, no, we do a fair bit of food and wine matching, although I think that can sometimes be over-analysed. But certainly we're keen to keep an eye on restaurants and how they handle wine. Mainly because there's quite a dearth of coverage in restaurant reviews and newspapers and magazines in terms of the wine element. You know, there's lots of restaurant reviews out there, but they very rarely mention the wine.
Yeah.
And yet in most restaurants, you'll be paying probably about 40% of your bill will be for the wine.
Yes.
The restaurants have got huge markups on it. They're making a lot of money off it. At least half of the stuff that we cover in terms of the restaurant reviews will be looking very much at the wine element of a restaurant and how much they offer by the glass, how clued up the sommelier is, how imaginative the list is. Obviously, it's important for our readers, but I think it ought to be important for all consumers.
So, Adam, what wines have you been drinking recently?
Well, I've been drinking simply by virtue of the fact that I've just bought a case of it, some very nice Valpolicella, non-Amarone. This is not the Valpolicella Amarone, but the standard Valpolicella.
Yep.
Particularly enjoy that. My taste
is... What price is that? Because normally Valpolicella, I always think of as sort of £2 a litre, real cheap stuff.
Yeah. Well, Valpolicella does have a reputation for being a kind of classic spag bowl wine. You know, it's the, as a region, it's making tremendous strides. And you're drinking now some really very, very nice wines. And prices, typically for Italy, prices veer wildly from the lower end, around about £6.99, £7.99. To the top end, you can pay around about £40 for a bottle of...
Is that what you were paying?
Well... I bought a mixed case, of course. I also have my ways of getting hold of... But on average, about £12 to £15 for a really good...
Valpolicella.
Yeah, really nice
drinking. Which is a great kind of price point, I think, for everyday drinking. You know, I think... And probably tallies a lot with our readers. They kind of see... For everyday drinking, well, obviously, a lot of our readers would also be spending a lot more than that on wines to lay down. But for wines to drink, you know, in the evening, as you say, with a meal, you can get some pretty good wines for that sort of price level in the classic regions. People tend to associate Bordeaux or Tuscany or the Rhone with being expensive. But it needn't be that way.
And Guy, what wines are you drinking a bit of at the moment?
Been on a bit of an Austrian binge, actually. We've known about Grüneveltliner for a little while now, but still amazes me just how good some of those wines are and how individual some of those wines are, the Rieslings too. But also, to a lesser extent, some of Austria's reds are worth a look.
Pinot Noir?
Again, the cooler climate stuff, but the Pinots are very, very interesting. Just got a real nice elegance and... bit of acidity to them that I enjoy. So and it's nice to. I mean, Austria has been fairly well covered in the press now, but I think in the minds of most consumers, they still see it as a little bit, still got to earn its spurs. So it's nice to be able to really champion these wines that are coming from lesser known regions.
Yeah. What sort of wine tip have you got for us, Guy?
I think my key wine tip would be: don't be afraid of opening bottles. A lot of people seem to, you know, particularly when they're spending a fair amount of money on a bottle, or they might have laid a bottle down for a few years and they've got a special wine at home that they're saving and saving to drink on a special occasion, and they get so head up about opening it that they either never do, or when they do, it's past its best.
Yep.
Or worse still, they feel so much pressure to when they open it that they don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And some of my most enjoyable wines have been drunk just when I'm, you know, on the spur of the moment in a relaxed frame of mind with some friends and a takeaway. Always better, I think, to drink a wine too early than too late.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I keep about 2 cases of wine each year that I keep for special occasions. But by having it, you know, a bottle of about every 2 weeks, you know that there's going to be something there that you can drink. You know, I'm not talking sort of £100 bottles of wine, but something reasonably decent.
Mm.
And that works quite nicely, because that way when you've got someone over for dinner, you don't mind cracking it open because you've got another one for next week.
Yeah.
And Adam, have you got a tip for us?
Ah, yes, my wine tip. I would say that in this warm weather, I mean, it's not quite so warm now, but it has been warm, is chill your reds. Get your reds cooled down. If you've got a bottle of red that's been sitting in the kitchen, stick it in the fridge for an hour before you drink it. Don't chill it right down.
It,
you know, don't put it in the freezer.
Job.
But just, you know, take the heat off it, because red wine at blood temperature is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of tastings. I've had to chill the wines down for them. And when you first taste the wine before you chill it down, it's just alcoholic. All that seems to come off the wine is alcohol.
Mm. Look at the temperature of all your wines, actually, because people drink white wines far too cold and they drink red wines far too warm.
Yeah.
My father-in-law used to, if he had a bottle of red wine, he'd stick it on the Arga for an hour and it's practically bubbling before you drank it.
A lot of people go, oh, I like my wines quite big and robust. And obviously the warmer the wine, the less the acidity comes through. So it has that perception of being bigger than it is.
Mm.
And if you chill the wine too much, sometimes it might be a bit...
Kills the flavour as well. Yeah, yeah. And then a lot of wines suffer from being served too cold. So it works both ways.
Slightly chilled, but not cold.
Absolutely.
Sounds good. All right, boys. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Guy and Adam. Next week, we're going to be talking to Decanter Magazine again, this time about their wine awards. It's quite a good opportunity to get your head around how wine awards work. I remember looking at a bottle of wine a wee while ago that had an award. It said something like gold medal, South Brisbane Primary School Wine Competition. And, you've got to wonder about the quality of that award. We get to find out about how they decide on how awards are given out. I remember being quite surprised when I first joined the wine trade that there's more than one gold medal given out. It's not like the Olympics where there's a single winner. So we'll have a listen to that next week. And until then, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news is read by Jane Scott. Background news research is by Sandra Clements. The music for the UK Wine Show is Griffiths de Jingle 1 by Marcel de la Giartelli and Silence by Italy North.